One of the first things we see of God is that He displays the greatness of His power as He calls into existence all things and as He brings out of nothing into existence everything that has been made. This is why Paul, many centuries later on, could reveal that through creation that God's power has been made clearly evident and that it's known to everyone, that the heavens themselves declare the immense power of God, that He has formed and fashioned, that He has created all things, that even at this moment by His power, He is upholding all things. We see that this attribute, that it is praised and that is extolled over and over again throughout the Psalms. Not only as we learn to read the Psalms, but as we continue to learn to even sing the Psalms in public worship. That the psalmists, that David, that the others never tired of glorying and relishing in this truth that God is the Almighty and that compared to Him that none are strong, that none can turn back or thwart His purposes. We even see in the earthly ministry of Jesus that it was Jesus' power that was often marveled at. You think of the way that the crowds wondered at His teaching, that He taught as one who had authority. You think of Jesus in Luke 5 as the paralytic was lying there and Jesus forgave his sins and the people grumbled and complained and said only God has the power to forgive sins. And that Christ, in a great display of power, forgave not only the man's sin but caused him to walk so that the crowds marveled, so that they feared, so that they wondered, who is this one that is in our presence? Hopefully you remember that Paul prayed earnestly on behalf of the church that we would know the power of God. So we often reference that threefold prayer in the book of Ephesians. Paul tells the church that I'm praying for you and I'm praying that you would know the hope of your calling. I'm praying that you would remember the glorious inheritance that you have amongst the saints. But thirdly, I pray that you would know the greatness and His surpassing power that is at work in you and for you and through you. Even as John gives us a revelation in the glorious throne room of Christ, and we see the exalted Christ there, what are the elders and what are the beasts and what are the heavenly hosts exalting and praising Him for, but that He has all power and authority and dominion over all things. The attribute of God's omnipotence is one of the clearest in all of the Scriptures, indeed, even in creation. And as the Scriptures conceive of the power of God, we see that God's power is infinite, that His power is immeasurable, that His power is inexhaustible, that God can do and does do whatever He wants, that there is nothing that is too difficult for Him to do, that He can save the basest of the base of sinners, that He can create and form and fashion all things by nothing but speaking a word, that even as God unleashes His power, that never does He drain Himself of power or lack strength. Never in the course of all eternity shall God suffer even the slightest weakness in His being, in His person, in His nature. But that God's power, it is infinite, that it is immeasurable, that it is inexhaustible in all of its ways and its doings. It's a great encouragement to us as Christians. It's a great encouragement to us, even as American Christians living in the 21st century, when we can be so tempted to ask, where is the strength and the power of the church? Why is it that the church seems to be the offscourging of the world and only continues to appear even weaker and more impotent in and of itself? When we face difficulties that seem too hard for us to bear and burdens that are heavy upon our shoulders, to know that our God is one who is clothed in immeasurable strength in all that He does. Remember, even as we weep and we mourn for our loved ones that are unsaved, that it is not beyond the power of God, by nothing more than the mere snap of His fingers to save whom He wills. Remember that even all the powers of darkness and the forces of hell are as nothing compared to God, and that He could vanquish them with nothing more than the breath of His mouth. There's so many encouragements that pour to us from this glorious attribute that God is omnipotent. And And there's many different ways that we could explore this doctrine tonight, but this evening, we simply want to focus on how God's power can be and is experienced in our lives. How God's power is experienced in our lives. And we see something of this in Paul's accounting here of 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 through 10. Many of us are familiar with this, and yet this is a passage that still is shrouded in some mystery and still confounds us. Paul opens up by noting that if he's going to go on boasting, that he can, though he knows there's nothing to be gained by it. And then he goes into this account, and as many believe, and I'm of the mind with them, that as he speaks in verse 2 of the man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven, that Paul is undoubtedly speaking of himself. And Paul reveals here to the church in Corinth that as an apostle and as the apostle to the Gentiles, as the one who is born as though in an untimely way, the final man that the risen Christ appeared to in bodily form, that here Paul was privileged with this glorious revelation. That here he was taken up into the third heavens, into the heavens of heavens. And what is so striking here is that what was revealed to him, that he was forbidden from being able to even utter these things. That's quite astounding as we think of that, to wonder what would it have been like? What could Paul have possibly seen? What glory was manifested to him as he was caught up in this divine revelation into the third heavens? And yet we see that even for one like Paul, who was privileged with such a glorious view of Christ himself and was told of these mysterious things that no man may utter and that we simply wait for eternity to have revealed to us, that Paul, despite all of this glory that was conferred to him, that he notes there in verse 5, that he would never boast of it. And that all of his boasting would only be in his weakness. And here Paul tells the church in Corinth, and he tells us down in verse 7, that to keep him from becoming conceited. Think of an individual who is privileged to see such a glorious revelation, such a glorious vision, how tempting it is to begin to think of yourself really highly. And we perhaps would have even given Paul a pass here. I mean, this is Paul, the Apostle Paul, but this is the man who suffered so much for the sake of Christ. This is the man whom the Lord was so pleased to use in so many wonderful and miraculous ways to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. That this was perhaps the most learned man that the world has ever seen, save Christ himself, that this was the Apostle Paul. And yet Paul even notes here that for as great as he may be and esteemed in the eyes of men, that God saw fit that lest he become conceited, lest he have too puffed up of a view of himself, that God was pleased to give him a thorn in the flesh. Paul doesn't tell us what this thorn in the flesh was. There are some who believe it was spiritual. There are some who believe that it was physical. Some who believe that it was his failing eyesight, that he couldn't see. We don't know the details of what this thorn in the flesh was, other than Paul tells us that it was a messenger of Satan that had come to harass him lest he should become conceited. Paul, rightly so, and being so afflicted, he says, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. And how is it that God responds to one even like Paul as he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. What a tension-filled contrast we have here. Of Paul, 1 minute in exalted glory, beholding and hearing things that our ears can't even begin to fathom, and the next minute to be in the depths and the throngs of afflictions and sufferings and weaknesses. It's often how we live the Christian life, isn't it? Much like Paul, that even in our greatest times, that often what follows our greatest times are our most difficult times, that often what follows the mountain highs, if you will, are the lowest lows of the valleys. And Paul tells us, he shows us here that he is a diligent student. Because we see the lesson that Paul learned as he says, therefore I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. And he sees that this is the way in which God magnifies his power, that he magnifies His divine omnipotence through our weaknesses. And then coming in verse 10, Paul really succinctly states why it is that all of this has transpired and what a life-altering perspective it is. Because Paul, as he summarizes this experience for us, he tells us that this is what defines his service to Christ. That he says, for the sake of Christ, then I am content with weaknesses. Now this is such a startling revelation of Paul's service to Christ, that typically when we think of our service to Christ, we think of those things that we want to do for Christ, those things that we can do for Christ, those gifts and those graces that He has kindly and graciously given to us, that we might work for Him, that we might strive for the kingdom. And while that undoubtedly colors in part of our service to Christ, Paul says something startling here, that it is not simply in the presence of all that we can do that we serve Christ, but that it's also in the presence of all that we cannot do. That Paul serves Christ through his weakness, through his insults, through his hardships, through his persecutions, through his calamities, namely through his weakness. Paul comes to see that this isn't just the way that he is to serve Christ, but we are to serve Christ by acknowledging our weakness. And not only does it define his service to Christ, but maybe even more startling, Paul shows us how this challenges our satisfaction in Christ. Now, ESV has a relatively weak translation here, but Paul says, for the sake of Christ, then, I am content. And we sometimes think of being content as just being satisfied, of just accepting the Lord's will for our lives, whether it is good, whether it is bad, to just kind of say, I'm not going to hold on too tightly to any of these things. But the word that Paul uses here in the Greek is far more than just the word content. That Paul literally, even as our older translations note here, that he says, I am well pleased with. Like this pleases me. This brings me a great amount of joy. I am very, very satisfied with my weaknesses. And how few of us as Christians come to be able to confess with Paul that we are content with, know that even our weaknesses are one of the sources of our greatest joys and our pleasures in life, all that we cannot do. And then Paul ends verse 10 here with this succinct statement, for when I am weak, then I am strong. And we see that the last half of verse 10 here, that it really hinges on two words, that it really shapes for us how it is that as Christians we come to experience the divine power of God. And the two words at the end of verse 10 hinge on is first the word when, and secondly the word then. That Paul's logic here reveals to us that if we want to experience the strength of God, if we want to experience the power of God, if we want to come into a realization of the omnipotency of God, that something lies behind that, that something must come to fruition first. Paul says that it is only when I am weak. It is only when I am weak that then I am strong. And so we have these two points to look at very briefly after this lengthy introduction. First, to look at the when, and then secondly, to look at the then. So Paul notes here that it is only when one sees themselves as weak that one can truly say that they are experiencing the power of God. Now, as Paul notes here, for when I am weak, what does he mean by weak? In what sense is he speaking? Well, I hope all of us are well acquainted enough with the Scriptures to know that Paul is not speaking of necessarily being physically weak. Right? That there are many physically strong people who can yet know and exemplify, come to a realization of the weakness that we are called to have as Christians. So Paul isn't specifically targeting physical weakness here, but it's virtually synonymous with a very low view of ourselves, with thinking very lowly of who we are and what we have and the abilities and the graces that even God in His kindness has given to us. That the weakness that Paul speaks of here is a realization of how finite we are, of how impotent we are, of how lowly we are, of how fragile we are in and of ourselves. I think perhaps it could go without saying that this is incredibly countercultural to everything that the world teaches. And it's so countercultural even to those American idols that we look up to and those individuals that we esteem. We often think that strength is good, that weakness is bad. Many of you come out of the baby boomer generation, the generation that said, I'm going to pull myself up by my own bootstraps, that we bite our lower lip, that we don't let people see our weakness, that in all things we want to put our best foot forward, that we want to look as though we are bastions of strength and of power and of ability. And these are the people that we idolize throughout our society and in our culture, that we don't esteem one who is weak in mind or weak in presence or weak in countenance or even physically weak, but it's the strong that we're attracted to. It's the strong that we lift up. It's the strong that we tend to exalt. You see, Paul teaches us here that our priorities are backwards from God's priorities. He teaches in the very least here that a man cannot be a Christian if he doesn't understand something of his weakness. Hope that all of us know this by some sort of practical application and experience. And nobody has ever come to Christ to be saved saying, I don't need you. Look at me. I can really do this all on my own. No, that's the very nature of being unsaved. That's the very nature of rejecting Christ. A man can't become a Christian if he doesn't know something of his weakness. You note here that Paul isn't speaking of initial salvation, but he's speaking of the very life of a Christian. And how true it is today that the faith of many is very impoverished. And it's impoverished because though we may see ourselves in our own weakness when it comes to saving ourselves, that somewhere in there, even as Christians, we begin to take confidence in our own strength and our own abilities and these things that we can do, that so often we think that to be a Christian means that we grow stronger and stronger in and of ourselves. Now, you talk to any number of men or women, or you hear the way in which they speak of the faith and the things of the Lord, and I'm quite sure that all of us have run into people that are very confident in their own strength. That they're very confident in the strengths of their gifts and their graces that God has given to them. Think of a well-known pastor who, preacher, probably not a pastor because he wasn't technically pastoring a church, but a well-known preacher. That many of us have heard, and I'm not going to name him, but striking to see how it is that he got his start. He entered into preaching competitions where he would go amongst other people and they would compete for who could preach the finest sermon. And this man being puffed up with his own strengths and with his own understanding and contented with the gifts that the Lord had given to him. How many people are confident in the strength of their knowledge? Their knowledge of the Scriptures, their knowledge of theology, their knowledge of doctrines that we believe in, being able to wheel and deal with this and being able to dance with the most intelligent. I don't think I have need to tell you that in the Reformed world that this is relatively ubiquitous. The people are often pleased with that they stand in some amount of confidence with the strength of their knowledge. We have many people that walk into our church from outside of the Reformed faith, and one of the common things that we hear is, I once thought I knew what the Bible taught and what Christianity was, and then I joined a Reformed church. And so many people that say the Reformed, they have it together. They understand their Scriptures and their doctrine, how easy it is to cater to that and to take confidence in the strength of our knowledge. There's so many other Christians that are content in the strength of their own self-sufficiency. Not only do they not pray themselves, but they don't dare ask others for prayer because that would reflect that I'm weak, and I'm not weak, but I'm sufficient in and of myself. I'm strong enough to bear these difficulties, these challenges, these sicknesses, these ailments that afflict me. Others who are confident in the strength of their virtues, patting themselves on the back, so to speak, because they're good little upright Christians that all people ought to admire, people who find confidence in the strength of their wisdom or their cleverness. You don't have to look out in society and amongst the churches to see how many churches are quite confident in the strength of their prowess and of their cleverness to build big churches and to appeal to the masses. There are many who are confident in the strength of their experience. and tell you how many times I've heard from individuals, if you only experienced as much as I experienced it, you'd be a much better Christian, or one day you'll have the wisdom that I have because I've been through so much. And the confidence in riches, the confidence in the strength of our vocations and what we put our hands to. There are so many people's faith who is impoverished because we are so taken by our own strength and our own power. And yet for Paul, this is relatively basic Christianity. That Paul says, when I am weak. When I am weak. It's a broad characterization of the Christian life. That in and of ourselves, we are weak. And we are frail, and we are fragile, and Paul doesn't shy away from owning this, but he proclaims it, and he even says, this is where I am going to glory, and this is what my boasting is going to be, not in all the privileges that God has given to me, but that my boasting is going to be in my own insufficiencies and in my own weaknesses. And so how is it that we know when we are weak? Paul says here, when I am weak, how can we gauge ourselves? Do we have this mindset that Paul has? Can we say with Paul, yes, I am weak and I am boasting and glorying in my weakness. How can we know? We know that we are weak when we are consciously weak. We are consciously weak. You think of Christ as He spoke to His disciples in John chapter 15, verse 5, that He told them in no uncertain terms, you can do nothing apart from me. That as we are the branches, so He is the vine, and to be cut off from Christ means that there is nothing that we can do for ourselves or for the advancement of the kingdom, that there is no good that we can bring into the world, that there is no ultimate service that we can render to anyone or anything, that we lack all usefulness, that we lack all fruit-bearing, and we must consciously know this. This isn't a doctrine that we can just kind of compartmentalize and stick up on the higher shelf and say, occasionally I'll bring this down and I'll remind myself of this, but each and every day are we consciously aware of our weakness. We know that we are weak, not only when we are conscious of it, but when we are growingly weak day by day and year by year with each passing hour. And this is one of the great deceptions of the evil one, to make us think that the longer that we're Christians, then the more strong we must be in and of ourselves. You hear this in my particular case, an example as a pastor, that people say the longer you preach, the easier it must become. I remember hearing John MacArthur, who's been preaching for at least half a century, and he once noted to his congregation, that is so far from the truth. He says, the longer I preach and the more decades that I stand behind the pulpit, the more weak I become, the more insufficient I see myself, the more difficult and laborious is the labor of preaching. And to be a Christian is to grow in a conscious awareness that each and every day we are weaker in of ourselves and utterly more dependent upon God and upon Christ and upon the promises of the gospel. We know that we are weak when we are pained by our weakness. When we are pained by our weakness, when we feel it in our hearts and our minds, and when we lament it. Because we weren't created to be weak. We weren't created to be frail. We weren't created to be so unable to do all that the Lord has called us to do. And this ought to afflict us. And this ought to challenge us. And this ought to pain us to cry out, even with Paul, what a wretched man I am. Who is going to save me from this body of death? We know that we are weak when we are contritely weak. And we acknowledge that most of our weakness is the result of our sin. And so we lament our sin, and in one sense we weep over our weakness that we have created for ourselves. We know that we are weak when we are thoroughly weak. When we understand that the weakness of a Christian, that it is one that touches upon our mind, upon our words, upon our affections, upon our desires, upon our will, that in all of these things, in and of ourselves and left to ourselves, we are nothing but weak and impotent and powerless and frail and fragile and dependent. And so Paul shows us here this first step of experiencing the power of God, is that it only comes when we are weak. And yet the logic goes on here in verse 10. Paul says, "For when I am weak, it is then that I am strong." Now, undoubtedly, this is one of the glorious paradoxes of the Christian life. And it ought to show us that as Christians, that though we glory in, that though we boast in our weakness, that though Paul himself does, that Paul's interest here isn't being a defeatist. That Paul's not saying, look, you are so weak and impotent in and of yourselves, and so just sulk around like a groaning Eeyore all the days of your life. That Paul doesn't have this morbid defeatist mindset amongst himself. He doesn't want us to simply mull over our weakness and come to realize it in order that we would completely throw up our hands in complete and utter despair, but he does it for the very intention that we might be driven to the very source of divine power, to turn us from outside of ourselves to go to God who is our exceeding strength. And this is why Paul can say, when I am weak, it is then that I am strong. It is not a strong and a strength that comes within Paul or comes within us and our psyche and our minds and our wills, but it is a strength that comes only as we, through faith, forsake ourselves and go to Christ and go to God, the one who is clothed in all strength and omnipotency. Our weakness is meant to drive us to God. And that when that happens, then we can say with Paul, then I am strong. Just as we seek to understand what does Paul mean when he says, when I am weak, what does Paul mean when he says, then I am strong? And this is easy to misunderstand. I'm very thankful to be part of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, where I pray that the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel doesn't infiltrate our ranks. But if you have your ear to cultural Christianity, you know that the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel, that this is ubiquitous in Christianity. As Rachel and I had the opportunity to spend 2 years in Indonesia, we saw how prevailing is the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel. That in Indonesia, you really had two types of Christians. You had the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel Christians, and you had the Reformed Christians. And to be a Reformed Christian in Indonesia meant you weren't the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel Christian. It didn't mean you held to the Westminster standards or that you were even necessarily a Calvinist. The health, wealth, and prosperity gospel, the name it and claim it movement of faith, would have us to think that the strength that we experience as Christians is that just as God calls nothing or calls things out of nothing into existence, that so too we can. And so this is the gospel that's filling the hearts and the minds of countless many people, that they are told you just have to have a positive mindset, that as long as you just see yourself as receiving these blessings and these pleasures and this wealth and these cars and everything that you want and even good health, that God is going to give that to you because He is strong. It's so easy to misunderstand what Paul means here when he says, then I am strong. I wonder if anybody else had the unfortunate circumstance many years ago to have the power team come to your town or to your church. Maybe it was just a northern United States thing. But the power team, these great big buff guys that would come and they'd tattoo on themselves Philippians 4:13, and they'd say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And they'd say, here's a display of the power of God. And they'd take a phone book and they'd rip it in two. And we'd all sit there and go, wow, this is amazing. If I just have faith, then I can rip phone books in two as well. And I can bend iron bars over my head. This was incredibly popular when I was growing up. So many people who misunderstand what it means to be strong in the Lord and to have His strength and His power, and undoubtedly He cannot be manipulated like that. When our weakness drives us to God's power, we become strong and strengthened to live according to His will. That's the power that we experience in our lives. That's the strength that the Lord Himself imparts to us. You think of Peter in 2 Peter 1:3, that he notes something very similar to what Paul says here. He says that God's divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. The strength that God Himself gives to His people when we see our weakness is not a strength to rip phone books into. It's not a strength to name and claim that Ferrari that I want. It's not the strength to absolve myself of all physical infirmities and sicknesses and illnesses, but it is a strength and it is a power to do all that God would have us to do. We even see that in the immediate context of 2 Corinthians chapter 12 here in Paul, that Paul's weakness drove him to God and to God's power that he might live in humility. Now, this is a striking confession even from the Apostle Paul that even he would be one who struggled with arrogance and with pride and with being conceited, that even for one like Paul, that humility was not a natural fruit that he bore in his life. But he says, this messenger of Satan came to buffet me. This thorn in my flesh was given to me. I needed to learn my weakness so that I wouldn't be conceited, so that I wouldn't be exalted, so that I would live in humility before God and before others. And this is the power, this is the strength that Paul glories in. This is his hope. This is what his weakness drives him to. Because the life of faith, it doesn't come naturally to any of us. My favorite Scottish Puritan, if you can call him a Puritan, Samuel Rutherford once wrote, "Think not that the life of faith is easy, for it is a steep ascent to eternal glory, and many are lying dead by the way." And when we begin to think all that the Lord in His grace calls us to do, all that is meant to shape and to characterize a godly life, we see how much we need the strength and the power of God. You think it's easy to have faith? You think it's easy as a Christian to live by faith, where we stake our lives on things that are unseen and things that are hoped for, when the life of faith often calls us to deny what it is that we see and what it is that we feel and what it is that we experience in and of ourselves? I'm assuming that we all know the cross of what it is to live by faith, and if left to ourselves, how weak and helpless we would be to live not by sight but by faith in the sure and the steadfast promises of God. Is it an easy thing to love as we have been loved? To look at our brothers and our sisters and to deal with them in charity, to exemplify and to model the virtues of 1 Corinthians 13, where we're taught that love isn't selfish, that love doesn't puff oneself up, that love doesn't rejoice in wickedness, but it rejoices with the good, that love bears all things, that love hopes all things, that love endures all things. Do you think you have the ability to love as Christ has loved you? Undoubtedly, no. But in God's kindness and in His mercy and His grace, He gives us the power, He gives us the strength, He gives us the experience of His divine omnipotence that we might walk in love with one another. How often we can't muster up even the slightest sense of patience and long-suffering in our hearts and our minds and our wills. How often just being content in the place that God has called us to is a feat far too great for us, particularly living in discontented United States of America. How often forgiveness is challenging, to look at one who has wronged us and to say, I'm going to absolve myself of any right that I have to seek vengeance or justice or to require anything from your hand, but as I have been forgiven, so I will forgive you. How difficult it is to live a life of faithfulness and of commitment to God's Word against all odds and against all of the world that tries to lure us in with the temptations and the deceits of the flesh and of the world and of the devil. How difficult it is to be men and women and children of conviction. And yet Paul teaches us here that when we are weak and we see our weakness and we are driven to God, it is then that we experience His power and His strength to help us to live in a way that is pleasing to Him in all things, in all situations, through all circumstances. This is how kind God is. How merciful He is to us, that He supplies us with the very power that we need to be strong. And to see that what He has called us to in the life of faith that by His power alone we can do all things according to His will. Brothers and sisters, there is no lack in the strength of Almighty God. Same power that created the universe, that upholds all things in creation moment by moment, same power that worked our redemption is a power that lives within us. And it is a power that we can experience. But the logic of verse 10 here is that we only experience that power when we come to understand our weakness. It is when I am weak that then I am strong. May the Lord be blessed forever. Amen. Please join me in a word of prayer.